Be seated, please. Listening to morning prayer, that is, praying morning prayer by listening to the audio version, as I do on most days. On Wednesday, I heard the online officiant read these words from John's Gospel. Jesus is speaking to the Pharisees after having healed the blind man. You remember that story from a couple of weeks ago. Jesus says, "The Father loves me because I lay down my life in order to take it up again. Because I lay down my life in order to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have power to lay it down, and I have power to take it up again. I have received this command from my Father." It strikes me that in this declaration, Jesus is saying, "Don't be fooled. No one is compelling me to do this, not even my Father. I lay my life down of my own accord. I have power to lay it down." He himself was aware, I believe, that he was destined for Jerusalem and the events we've just read about. And he wanted the Pharisees and the townspeople and all who followed him to remember these words in the hour of his death. If it were not by Jesus' own voluntary act, this execution would have been nothing more than another miscarriage of justice, another innocent person put to death by a crowd gone wild, led by corrupt leaders with their own agenda. The consequence of that for our faith might be something like, God the Father has sacrificed God the Son against the latter's will. That would have been the best interpretation if this had been done against Jesus' own will. Or maybe we were wrong about this man. Whether he was a criminal or not, he simply knuckled under to authority and failed even to speak up in his own defense. But that's not what happened. What happened was, as someone pointed out in Bible study 2 weeks ago, that shortly after Jesus descended from the Mount of the Transfiguration, Luke tells us, he set his face to go to Jerusalem. He knew his mission. He knew the people who sought to do him harm. He knew that the only way to intervene, the reason he came in the world to intervene, was to show that God withholds nothing from us. God's love passes all human understanding. So committed was he to the idea of violent resistance that he chastised, in another gospel it says, Peter, for injuring the slave of the high priest. Jesus knew, given the atmosphere in that particular time and place, and the general tendency of humans to fight for power or to hold on to the power they already have, that these events and his death were inevitable. As I was contemplating this sermon a few days ago, my thoughts turned to Martin Luther King Jr. and his predictions of his own death, at least an acknowledgement of his awareness that his actions might result in his death by those who felt threatened by his words and actions. There's a parallel to be sure, but the big difference between the two assassinations is this. King's death, a martyrdom in its own right to be sure, did indeed have tremendous consequences, echoing down to our present day. His preaching and actions in the face of this were courageous beyond ordinary belief. That must be acknowledged, and I believe that God acted through that prophet in a unique way, consonant with God's actions through prophets before King. He was a human being living at a particular time and place and was used in a particular way in the struggle for justice and filial love, that is, love among God's children, our brothers and sisters. The difference is, the big difference is, that Jesus, also a human being, living in a particular time and place, is also God, whom we know now as the second person of the Holy Trinity, the divine word spoken to create all that is. Jesus, the man, both Jesus, the man, and Christ, the anointed Messiah. Jesus' death was real. There was no trickery involved, no sleight of hand, no mimicking of death, but the real thing, with real pain and real feelings of aloneness and abandonment. If it were not so, it would have been one or all of those things, trickery, mimicry, and so on. So what we have here is the culmination of the first and great sacrifice of 33 years' duration. The last and great sacrifice of 33 years' duration. Giving up all divine prerogatives in order to experience life as a creature rather than creator, and to open up for all of us life eternal in a way possible only to God. And by all of us, not just people who had been oppressed and who had been denied legal rights in a certain place and time, but all of us, I mean past, present, and future. All of us. At the moment, I'm rereading C.S. Lewis's Mere Christianity. I'm not sure I'm recommending it to you, as I'm having some real difficulties as I make my way through it. Having said that, I am bowled over by phrases and analogies and brilliance of mind that Lewis has contributed to our understanding of our faith as Christians. I'm actually listening to it as an audio book, which puts me pretty close to the original experience, because the book was, before it was a book, was a series of BBC radio broadcasts from 1941 through 1944. And even though it's not Lewis's voice, it's an Englishman's, and it's believable. Before the week is out, that is, on Monday, Thursday, or Good Friday, I will probably have more to say about and from Lewis's book. But it's certainly working in me already now, especially what I've just talked about this distinction of a brave and courageous hero and martyr and the sacrifice of God's own self made flesh and blood. This octave, the 8 days including today and the week following, culminating in Easter Day, is a distillation of our faith. Specifically, as Lewis says, the facts of our faith related to what theologians call Christology and atonement and redemption. This week is about Christ redeeming or saving us from evil, which Lewis terms a perversion of good. That is a wonderful example of Lewis at his best, I think, pointing out that without good, the goodness of creation, God's goodness, we would have no idea of what bad looks like. It would just seem normal. Again, there may be more about this later in the week. I'm eager to find out. These liturgies with palms and foot washing and walking through the stations of the cross are an invitation to you and to me to put ourselves into the story. Not in a breast-beating mea culpa sort of way, but along the lines of seeing ourselves more clearly, of understanding that alloy of love and free will and God's will of which we are all made. They're an invitation to see ourselves in each person, each scene, each situation, in order to open ourselves to the deep and broad and merciful depth of Jesus' sacrifice and God's love for every one of us. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit.